Hi, this is Mark. The following story was produced by 60 Minutes, a television magazine, that discusses common traits shared by those who commit crimes like the one committed in Tucson, Arizona. I found it interesting, and I hope you will too. Take care. Bye-bye.
If you think what happened in Tucson is incomprehensible, you're about to meet people who understand the madness behind a massacre. The United States Secret Service has studied 83 assassins and would-be assassins, and it's found remarkable similarities among them. As you see what we've learned about the accused Tucson gunman, notice how he fits what the Secret Service discovered. The horrific loss of innocent life seemed to come from nowhere, but it appears Jared Loughner followed a well-worn path on his final descent into madness. In the hours before the massacre, Jared Loughner was busy wrapping up his troubled life. At this drugstore, just before midnight, he dropped off a roll of film, pictures he shot of himself posing with his gun. Then he checked into this motel, 2 miles from his home and his parents. At 2 a.m., the moon was out. It was a little above freezing, and life as he knew it would be over in about 8 hours. He seemed upset as he said his goodbyes. It appears he made one phone call to a close friend. That call at 2:05 a.m. went unanswered, so Loughner left this brief message.
Hey, it's Jared. So, I just want to tell you a good time. Peace out. Later.
Peace out is slang these days for goodbye.
There's this heavy sigh
at the end. It was all in past tense, you know, and it sort of bothered me how he said, you know, we've had good times.
Bryce Tierney heard his cell phone ring at 2:05, but instead of a number, his screen said restricted, so he didn't pick up.
I was afraid that I was going to wake up and find out and see his name in an obituary in a couple days.
Tierney and Tyler Conway met Loughner in high school and hung out with him 4 or 5 times a week.
Up until, you know, he was about like 19 or 20, he was always, you know, pretty enthusiastic, pretty passionate. He was always quiet, but you could see that there was that passion in him, and he did care, he was happy. He was always an observer, and especially around the time he started getting mentally ill.
We don't know what was happening to Loughner, and a lot of what you're about to hear isn't going to make sense. But Tierney and Conway say that's because their friend was slipping into insanity, and it was showing up in the poetry he wrote.
I started seeing a heavy influence of just chaos and non-connective patterning in his poetry, just ranting or mixing of ideas.
Did you ask him what he was driving at, what he was thinking?
Oh, yeah, and I told him, I was like, because I read it, and I just don't find, I find nothing. It's like nothingness to me. And he was like, exactly, you know, that's where the meaning is. Yeah. People are going to say he doesn't believe in anything, but it's not that he doesn't believe in anything. He literally believes in nothing, nothingness.
Tierney and Conway told us Loughner was interested in a philosophy called nihilism that essentially says life is meaningless. They say he was obsessed with the film Waking Life, in which a man walks through his dreams listening to various philosophies.
Man wants chaos. In fact, he's got to have it. Depression, strife, riots, murder.
This character echoes something at the center of Loughner's apparent delusions, that big government and media conspire to silence the average guy. To protest his lack of voice, the character sets himself on fire. Loughner told his friends that reality has no more substance than dreams.
He was obsessed with how words were meaningless. You know, you could say, oh, this is a cup, and hold a cup, and he'd be like, oh, is it a cup or is it a pool? Is it a shark? Is it, you know, is this an airplane, you know?
In 2007, Loughner brought one of his nonsensical questions to one of Congresswoman Gabrielle Gifford's community meetings.
The question he asked her was, what is government if words have no meaning? And she read it, and obviously, you know, that's kind of a very convoluted question. You know,
Loughner told them what he thought of her reaction.
He saw it as a joke.
Yeah, a joke. Someone who works in the government can't answer that.
What was her answer to that question, as he put it to you?
She didn't answer it. She couldn't answer it. I mean,
how could you? But because she didn't answer the question, he had disdain for her.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he told you.
I think that anyone who didn't connect to his lines of thinking, he had disdain for her.
His friends say Loeffner's lines of thinking intersected with conspiracy theories, that government controls people's minds and U.S. currency is worthless. His only known meeting with Giffords was 3 years and 4 months before the assassination attempt. When police searched Loeffner's home, they found a form letter from Giffords thanking him for attending. On the envelope, he wrote, "Die, bitch." He held on to that letter all those years.
These are not impulsive, out-of-the-blue events.
Robert Fine and Brian Voskuhl wrote a comprehensive study of assassins for the Secret Service in 1999. In prisons and hospitals, they talked to 20 subjects, including Arthur Brimmer, who shot presidential candidate George Wallace, Mark Chapman, who murdered John Lennon, and Sirhan Sirhan, who killed Robert Kennedy. They found that assassins come from all walks of life, but travel a common path, leaving distinctive clues.
Rarely were their direct threats communicated to the target or to law enforcement authorities, but very often there was some kind of communication, be it a communication to a family member or to a friend, that suggested that the attacker or potential attacker was moving out on a path that might lead to an attack.
Well, one of the things that we also saw were that there were common motives among a number of these, to include drawing attention to a grievance, possibly looking for notoriety, potentially actually being suicidal and being willing to die or expecting to die in an attack and perhaps wanting to die.
In the more than 80 cases that you studied, was politics, pure and simple, ever the motivation?
I cannot think of a case where politics, pure and simple, was the motivation. Sometimes people used a political language, but people are more complicated than attacking somebody over, quote, a political motive.
I was looking for a location where I could test fire the gun.
This man, J.D., stalked two presidents, and in a prison interview, Fine and Voskuhl found that it wasn't politics, it was madness.
He believed that aliens were giving him a choice, either to kill a bunch of school kids or to assassinate the president.
And I decided I was going to dress up like a law enforcement person. So I bought a suit, shoes, and bought a trench coat, and I had a haircut.
J.D. showed them that the mentally ill can be organized enough to plan an attack. Their research also showed that one of the last steps on the path to violence is practicing with a weapon. That moment seemed to happen for Jared Loeffner around Christmas 2009. His friend, Zane Gutierrez, says that they shot target practice together, and Loeffner started researching the weapon that would ultimately be used in the Tucson attack.
Jared only spoke of purchasing a Glock police-issue firearm. It was the firearm that he thought that he would enjoy owning, pretty much.
For
every reason. If it was good enough for the police to use, it was good enough for him.
Something pivotal happened to Loeffner in March of last year. He ended his friendships and then started disrupting his classes at Pima Community College. Linda Sorensen sat near him in algebra.
It was on the very first day, within maybe half an hour at the very most. Jared started disrupting the class. He started shouting that this was all fraudulent, the teacher was trying to perpetrate a fraud, the material in the book was fraudulent.
You were witnessing a behavior that was irrational.
To be honest with you, I sat by the door because I wanted to be able to get out of the room quickly if I had to.
What were you afraid might happen?
I was afraid he was going to come into the room with a gun and shoot us.
The campus police were called to talk to Loeffner 5 times, but they didn't take him into custody or seek to have him sent for psychological evaluation because he hadn't threatened anyone. Then, Loeffner posted this video about the college on YouTube.
We are looking at students who have been tortured.
You can hear the disconnected thinking that others saw in his writing.
This is Pima Community College, one of the biggest scams in America. Here's the best part, the bookstore. The bookstore, the bookstore, the bookstore. It is so illegal to sell this book under the Constitution.
That's his reflection in the door.
We are also censored by our freedom of speech. This is genocide in America.
The video was the last straw for the college. It sent four officers to Loeffner's home to tell him he was suspended.
This is Jared from Pima College.
He was banned from campus until he sought mental health treatment. And with that, the college felt it had done its job protecting students and staff.
Just because you've expelled somebody doesn't mean you've gotten them off the path to violence. Indeed, you may have pushed them further down that path to violence.
Barry Spodak is a psychotherapist who uses training sessions like this one we filmed in 2000 to teach Secret Service agents how to use the assassin research. He says that the service sometimes spends years managing people who may pose the most dangerous threats to the president. Agents keep tabs on them, visit often, even make sure they're getting their medications and treatments.
Is it the school's responsibility to see to it that Loeffner has mental health care?
A school could certainly see it that way if they believe that the person may come back with more resentment and more anger and shoot up their campus.
Since Virginia Tech, Spodak has been training college administrators, but of course, no university and few police forces have the ability to manage a troubled mind the way the Secret Service does.
I've worked with enough people in college communities to realize that they're between a rock and a hard place. They don't have the tools or the resources that would be necessary, and a lot of them are very fearful about that.
The research on assassins shows that many killers started their final preparations after a life-changing event, and 2 months after his suspension from school, Loeffner bought that Glock he admired. As the Secret Service study might have predicted, so far it appears Loeffner communicated no threat directly to Giffords. His focus on her lasted years. Many saw trouble coming, even though no one had the whole picture. And in the end, Loeffner let others know when time was up. At 2 a.m., there was that call to Bryce Tierney.
Hey, it's Jared. So, I just want to tell you a good time. Peace out. Later.
After 4 a.m., investigators believe that he wrote this internet post that said, "Goodbye, friends. Please don't be mad at me." He went to Walmart to buy ammunition and loaded 92 rounds into four magazines. At 7:30, he was stopped in his Chevy Nova for running a red light, but the officer let him go with a warning. By 8, he was back home. His father confronted him about a black bag his son was carrying, but Loeffner ran away and then caught a taxi to the Safeway, where strangely, minutes from the massacre, he insisted on going inside to get change. He didn't want to give the driver a 20 for a $15 fare. By then, it was 10 a.m. Gabrielle Giffords was pulling into a parking space right on time.
When I saw his mugshot, That face tells me that exactly what Jared wanted to happen is happening.
Yeah.
Like, to the T. Like, even this right here. Like, he knew that his friends were going to come out and speak about him, and people were going to try to understand him. It's almost like he wants people to just question that.
Question why, and to not be given an answer.
Like the assassins studied by the Secret Service, it's likely Loeffner wanted a high-profile target to make some point only he understands. There was one other thing that the Secret Service discovered that was common. The assassins found that their attacks didn't solve their problems. Nearly everyone had profound regret. They cooperated with the study in the hopes that the violence would never happen again.